Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. Today I'm joined by Andy Cahill. Andy is the host of the podcast The Wonder Dome. He is also a transformational coach working with purpose-driven leaders and entrepreneurs. He earned his master's degree in leadership from the Harvard Graduate School of Education, where he focused his studies on adaptive leadership, and is the author of the critically acclaimed science fiction novel Gradient. And today we're going to be discussing the path to coaching mastery. In particular, we explore it from the lens of archetypes. What are the archetypes that we've each, in our own personal journeys, connected to that have transformed the work we do? How do they do that? And how did we connect to those archetypes? And we'll also explore this question of what is a coach for in our times when it feels like we're in a time between worlds and we've inherited a bunch of ideas about what it means to be human and what success is, and then therefore what is a coach for. If you enjoy this podcast, I'd invite you to subscribe. And if you want to know more about Coaches Rising and our acclaimed online coach trainings, you can head to coachesrising.com and you'll find more information there. Let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Andy Cahill. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. So Andy, we were just tuning into our conversation and you actually said, you know, you've been thinking about what is a coach for in our times. And I was like, why don't we start there? So why have you been thinking about that question?
Well, the greatest tragedy of so-called modern life, and this feels intense to say and confrontational to say, but also really obviously true to say, is that so many, like the livelihood that you and I get to participate in and that many of us get to participate in, has been built upon violence and displacement and subjugation and neglect of many people. So that's the great tragedy of our so-called modern life. Maybe the second greatest tragedy, or an extension of that tragedy, is that those of us who get to reap the benefits of so-called modern life, we can turn in so many directions and see depression, see loneliness. We can see a kind of a sort of more subtle subjugation in pursuit of money to sustain our livelihoods, and a sort of winnowing down and a kind of cutting off from the fullness and richness of what a human is for. Actually, so underneath the question of what is a coach for is really the question, what is a human for? And like, if you just sort of look at the patterns of modern life, the answer often seems to be a human is for making stuff and buying stuff. And maybe even there are some categories. Some humans get to participate in the making and stuff and the buying of stuff, and other humans only get to participate in the making of stuff. And there's a real sort of cutting off from the natural vitality and life force and diversity that, if we went far enough back in time, and we don't actually have to go that far back, 5,000 years, 10,000 years, 50,000 years, it was a completely different reality for a human. And then the word coach wouldn't even have existed, but we might have asked, what is a healer for? What is a cultivator for? What is a forager for? What is a hunter for? And so I think this question of what is a coach for feels really important, because if the answer is to keep the system as it currently is going, then I find that to be a very unsatisfying answer.
Great. Yeah, I wasn't expecting you to say that, because we didn't even check in why you'd been thinking about that question. And let me bring up what comes up for me, which is, we've been exploring on the podcast coaching and how it's baked into, the deep imaginary or deep beliefs of modernity and society, and that assumes something about what a human being is, and it assumes something about, what is the overarching aim of coaching, which I think, if I was to vastly simplify it, it might be something around it's to help people become more successful. Now, I know a lot of people would, take issue with that, but and that says something about society itself. And so I feel like a lot of resonance with what you share. It's like there's obviously many challenges we're facing, and coaching is rooted within that. And I feel like I also want to, how do I say this? And you said it very eloquently, but if I feel this perspective that like it's only rooted, in our kind of lineage that subjugated people, there's something about that that feels kind of limiting to me. It's like that. That's a lineage that subjugates people, or colonizes lands, or is in a very detrimental relationship with nature. I think those things are all true, and it feels like the other side of it is, I feel like coaching is an expression of a, and I think you were alluding to this already as well, and what you shared, like it's part of a lineage which goes back thousands of years, and has in its heart, it's about guiding others,
Or maybe simply accompanying others.
accompanying others. So yeah, that there's and that there are there that there's more to modernity, or more to modern life, than the subjugation of other people.
I think you're tuning right into sort of what my aspiration is as a practicing coach. It's like, what am I, what, like, in a way, the question, what is a coach for, is really a very personal question. What am I doing? Is this, Is this of any value? And even the word value is a modern word, right? Like, it's so connected to commodification and money and worth. And are you worthy enough to have a place in this sensorium, as Bio Akamalafe calls it? I was in San Diego a few years ago, about to lead a workshop on this wonderful framework for leadership called adaptive leadership that you and I have talked about. If you've never been to San Diego, everyone will tell you, oh, like San Diego, the weather's the best. Like, gotta get to San Diego. It's so good. You can be outside all year round. And I had never been to San Diego. So I get there, it's like May or June, and it's just clouds. So cloud. And then at some point I like pressure tested that with a local, and they're like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, May and June, that's like, they have a name for it. That's like, this is like the gray months or something. It's like, well, no one told me, but come on, what the heck? I thought I was gonna get sunshine and beach weather. So that was a sort of, could laugh about it, disappointment. But the other thing that no, not a single person had said to me, and this is not just a problem in San Diego, it's a problem in cities around the states and maybe even around the world, is how many displaced, unhoused people there were. Like, how many people were right on the brink of life and death, right on the streets of San Diego. And it made me feel so sad and angry to be walking around the city. The headline is the most beautiful, people who live there, the most beautiful city in the world. And it's felt like, it's so sad. And I can't do it. Like, I felt helpless. So I was sort of walking through the streets and just seeing so many people suffering and feeling like, and I'm about to go lead a workshop on leadership. Way to go, Andy. I really had parts of me that were up around this. So I made it to this cafe and just sat down and like just kind of noticed, like, oh, I'm really sad. Okay. I don't know what to do about this situation, but maybe I can do something for my sadness. And I happened to be near the Museum of Fine Art in San Diego. And I said, you know what? I'm gonna go in and find one piece of art that I can just sit with, because there's something I need, or my soul needs, or these sad parts of me need. And I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna see if I can listen to that rather than just kind of marinate in the anger and the sadness, which is a perfectly possible choice. So I went in and was navigating, paid the like $25 for the entry fee, and went in, was navigating, and found myself to the permanent installation of their East Asian, like a wing of East Asian art. I was like, kind of felt pulled in there, and beautiful sculptures and wall hangings and tapestries and pottery and just all. Oh, I was like, no, but that's not it. And then I turned this corner, and there was a larger than life statue. I mean, this was, if this person had been standing, they would have been 8 or 9 or 10 feet tall, of this woman seated with like one arm up on her knee, eyes kind of partly lidded, were they open or closed, unclear, mouth kind of, it was it a smile or not, unclear. It's very ambiguous, but nevertheless inviting presence. And there was a bench right in front of this statue. So I went and read the plaque, and it was a carving of Guan Yin. Which was the Chinese name for one of the five avatars in Buddhism, the bodhisattvas, the five great bodhisattvas of Buddhism after the Buddha. And she's the one who hears the sounds of the universe. She's the embodiment of compassion. So I was like, oh, bench, compassion, sadness. Let me sit here. And I sat there, and instantly, this was carved by somebody, or maybe multiple people, thousands, 3,000 plus years ago, before the birth of Jesus Christ, like participating in something with real people made with human hands. What is a human for? Maybe one answer is to make something this beautiful and potent. To sit in front of that and immediately heard this voice in my head that might have been my own voice, but it was so clear. Of course you're sad. Just sit. Of course you can't do anything in the ways that you want to in this moment. Just sit. So I did. And I'm sitting there feeling a little self-conscious, kind of let and settling, eyes closed. And I hear this gaggle of high school students. And like there's all sorts of stories about teenagers and how whatever they are, obnoxious or, like uncaring or disrespect, all these adults have stories about teenagers, but I could hear them coming and now I was feeling self-conscious again. It's like, okay, but just, of course you feel self-conscious, just sit. And then the only way through the room was to go between me and the statue of Guanyin. So the teenagers, I can hear them talking. And then they arrive to the threshold of the room and whoosh, total silence. And I feel each one of them just pass between me and the statue, maybe a dozen of them. And out they go the other side, not a single sound. And suddenly my sadness started to lift or to dissipate. And I felt a sense of, well, what can I do with what I am? I can show up with respect and with kindness and with a willingness to be present to the people I'm about to go facilitate with. Is that enough for the pain on the streets? No, it's not enough. Of course, it's not enough. But that 10 minutes, including that encounter with those teenagers, completely opened up my life force in a way that I didn't quite know I needed. I knew I needed something, but I didn't know what. And I saw the teenagers later in the museum, and they were all like waving to me, like, there's the guy who was sitting in me. They were just so sweet, so disruptive of whatever story I might have had in my head about what was going to happen. And that was the energy that I said, okay, this is the energy to bring into the facilitation because whatever else is true, I'm here now with this group of people. And they might need something that they don't know what it is either, but if I can bring that as an invitation, then that's what this is for. That's what this is for. So I think the answer, I tell that story because in a way it answers the question. This is not a transaction. This is also not a solution. But it's an invitation. It's this invitation towards the life energy that includes all of our sadness and our upset, but also includes our compassion and our joy and our contentment. It's an invitation towards that life energy to come in. And so I think that's when I ask, what is a coach for? That's what a coach is for. To accompany someone in relationship to what's up for them. And see if they might find the deeper life energy that's flowing underneath their primary experience.
I'm glad you shared that because you took the words right out of my mouth. Because when you first started speaking, about the kind of worldview we find ourselves in, the danger is we can start to feel oppressed by that and then victimized by that. And then we set up a polarization, like this is wrong, it shouldn't be happening. And, there's a lot of polarization taking place in the world right now.
Everywhere we turn, yeah, it's so intense, yeah.
So this is interesting for me about the role of a coach, because on the one hand, you've named very articulately that we're in this world which is in, which has issues with it. And I think it's very obvious to people we're in a transition and certain things aren't working out and we need different ways of living together and collaborating. And I think for me, what is a coach right now? It is someone that can be part of helping people meet themselves and the world as we're going through this transition. And the way you just described so beautifully, it's like not to try and fix things, not to try and fix the world, but to help people meet themselves, to hold space for the grief, the sense of loss, but also the sense of something new coming in, the sense of evolutionary potential that opens up and comes through as we go through any transition. And that, so there's a kind of, place where the individual and the collective meet in that endeavor. So yeah, I was going to say that, and then you spoke it out very clearly. And that's a, it's a beautiful moment of Kuan Yin and what she represents, and that being an offer to you, a kind of transmission that invited you into a potent shift, which also speaks to me of what coaching can be.
One of the I do sometimes is to, I want to hear what's coming up for you, but it just feels like a moment to share from that. One of the prayers that I try and practice to varying degrees of success. I'm going to put that in air quotes because we used the word successful earlier. And it's a question I ask a lot: what does success look like as a coach? But one of the prayers is after that encounter with Guanyin is simply, when I'm feeling some flavor of those feelings or feeling some sense of, I mean, okay, for some reason, I'm the one who's been invited into this room. And I could make that all sorts of stories about that, but okay, I've been invited into this room or into this one-on-one conversation. And it's just a simple, like kind of picturing that statue that I encountered. It's just, may you see through my eyes. May you move through my body. May you work through my hands. And that feels really important as a way to like call in something that feels wider and deeper than Andy, the dad of three, who's feeling irritated or is distracted by the news headline or is feeling some feeling that isn't in service to the question of like, why am I the one who's here right now? What can I offer right now? How can I be of service right now?
Yeah, because we wanted to talk about our journey with coaching and this idea of mastering the art of coaching, as an ongoing, never-ending journey, perhaps. But one of what I hear inside of that is that there's a certain prayer which opens up a certain experience for you, which then allows you to hold space or to meet people in a way that's kind of more profound. Whatever word we want to use, than if you were just inside of, your kind of in a everyday, in quotes, everyday persona. Maybe you could say a little bit about, yeah, what's been key for you, and this is probably one of the practices. Like, if I, if we were to muse a little bit on this journey of towards mastery, what are the things that really stand out for you as being significant happenings or things that you do in that journey?
Yeah, this is, I think the story in that prayer is a way of kind of circling that and working with that. Maybe I'll start with what I know doesn't work. Like, I mean, maybe you can relate to this. There are absolutely parts of me that just want to be loved and like, oh, like, wow, Andy, what great coaching, Or like that changed my life. And it's like, so some parts of me are hungry for that. There's a kind of hunger that I'm aware of. And we could unpack that. Where does that hunger come from? Why is that so important? My headline is that's maybe another kind of knock-on effect of this modern life of isolation and commodification and performance and value is like we're all like hungry for a place where we feel like we belong, where we feel like we're seen. So it certainly doesn't work as well if I'm trying to get those needs met from my clients, for myself, or at least if that's the primary driver. And I think that prayer is an example of just like, it's not that I'm not here. It's not like the prayer is, may I disappear from view. Although perhaps that would be a really powerful prayer. Someone else might use that. But the prayer is rather, may I be some kind of vessel for something that's more spacious, more understanding, more compassionate, more creative, more open than the hungers might otherwise let me be. And if you think about, like, again, what is a human? What is a human for? One way into that question is what what sets us apart or what makes us distinct, what gives us the precise, what is the precise recipe of qualities that no other creature on this planet has that we have in that precise way. Like certainly there are creatures that can stand upright, and certainly there are creatures that have opposable thumbs, and certainly there are creatures that have two eyes on the front of their head. That's like all of that. But to put those physical qualities together, even for those of us who don't have full use of our legs, like there's still an uprightness that we seek with assistance. So there's something about our ability to kind of track and see things along a spectrum of distance that's a really potent human ability. And then to move towards those things on our 2 feet and to work with them with our hands, that's really potent human ability that cuts across culture and cuts across history. I think the other piece of that that's hidden or invisible to our physical sight is like, I don't know if these are our opposable thumbs, that like this is our opposable mind, our ability to imagine into different perspectives. I can start, if I wanted to, or you wanted to, we could start to be like, what is it like to be Joel right now? You know, or you could ask, what's it like to be Andy right now? And we wouldn't get all the data, but we'd get a simulation that feels it's very alive and real. And we can start to hold competing thoughts in our mind. And we notice a part of us is upset about the unhoused issue. And another part of us says, well, there's nothing we can do about it, so just ignore it. You know, we can notice the ways in which the debate and the question comes alive in our mind. And I would say the thing that's been most powerful for me as a coach is to tap into that imaginal power, which is probably the thing that makes us most distinct from all the other creatures on the planet, is the depth of our imagination. So if I can, you know, I don't know if Guanyin was real. I don't know the sculptors who carved that statue of her. You know, but I do know that if I can imagine the archetype of compassion, if I can tap into that, and also imagine that that archetype could just as easily live in you, Joel, as it lives in me, that's a practice. And that's a, there's an energy, there's something that happens physiologically, probably if you were to measure like my blood pressure and and the flow of serotonin versus cortisol, and if you were to measure neuronal activity, probably something like there's all of these shifts that can take place through the imagination, through the imaginal body that I think is bigger than, wider than, deeper than just our primary experience in the modern world, which feels very reductive and constrained. So I think one of the practices as a coach is to find with your imagination a place to work and a place to stand and a place to move from that is has a profound and immediate and real impact on your presence in that moment.
Beautiful. Let me riff on this a little bit. So, I've felt that, you know, in a sense, like I hear the topic of ensoulment and, you know, archetypes, and that, you know, if we're coaching from our, you know, inherited identity, with all its conditioning, which, you know, was maybe necessary and helped us remain in a sense of belonging and connection with our primary family and caregivers and, you know, community. But if that's where we're coaching from still, it kind of limits our capacity to access the territory you're talking about. So in a sense, there's this journey, this initiation that we can go through as a coach, which I think you know, that in itself is a kind of archetypal journey that not all coaches hold, but I've found certainly found to be psychoactive, and so it's, you know, this felt imaginary territory where the world becomes re-enchanted. You know, as you said, in the modern material world, it feels like we kind of just degraded that capacity in ourselves in Western culture, in not all places, but many. And so, that there's this felt experience of the imaginal that we can actually attune to or open into that has a certain intelligence and way of seeing in it. And so, I think this is a very worthy journey to partake in, and I want to ask you about that in a moment. Let me just share with you a couple of my experiences with that. So,
Yeah, nice.
through doing my own kind of ensoulment work and soul quests and, opening into this whole territory, what dropped for me and had this, I had this reflected by a wise soul to me was a kind of, and it sounds very simple, the archetype of being a container. And something just like, it was like a kind of tuning fork. Like when they offered that to me, there was a kind of yes in my being. And and it was a felt experience and a sense of potential and capacity, which then started to show up in my coaching with people as a felt experience, and it has a kind of psychoactive flavor to it. So that was one remarkable moment, and it's continued to unfold and kind of become more nuanced and enriched. And the other psychoactive kind of ingredient was this like mythopoetic identity that I attuned to of one day. And it's so funny because a dear friend of mine separately reflected this back to me. So it kind of reinforced it. But there was this sense of like one day, where I'm heading to is like being this elder in the forest who has moved through life and lived fully and had his heart broken open by life, been tenderized by life, and that his eyes are shining with the divine, with contact with God. God is in his heart, and he's just sat in the forest, and he has a hut, and the animals gather, and sometimes people wander into the forest, and there are these spontaneous interactions, and that's such an enriching, beautiful metaphor or archetype for me, and yeah, it's had such an impact on who I perceive myself to be in the journey of coaching mastery. So yeah, I'd wanted to share those, and those, images came to me not just through God, imagine, oh, I'm just going to make this up, it's a, and this is where I want to kind of segue back to you now, but it came through my heart. This is not a mental intellectual endeavor, but it's a journey of the heart, and one of, in a sense, attuning to what life wants with me through this attunement, So, and I could talk more about that in detail. We might get there, but I want to kind of volley it back to you and just see for you, to talk about your archetypes and this imaginal experience and how you access it.
I don't know ready. I don't know if I'm ready to receive the volley yet. That was I'm really like, I don't know if you share video, I forget, but I'm just like
We've got the video going, but yeah.
smiling so much as you share both of those. And there's something for me about the sort of the more abstract, like to be a container. But we could even just stay with that for a moment and actually like notice that like a hug is a kind of containment, a sort of confidence is a kind of containment. Like there's all these ways in which just by showing up with that wise invitation towards being a container, that already has what you call the psychoactive effect. But then the next layer, the next cut, this elder Joel, who we could get into a really nerdy debate about how time works. I won't do that. But there is the sort of to just accept and allow for the possibility that that is an actual place and state and future, and that the possibility for Joel the elder who has a home in the forest, that could just be a fun fantasy, but when you really feel it in your heart, like you described, that comes to life in a way that our nervous system doesn't really make a distinction between, oh, that's fantasy and that's reality. It's like, no, there is actually a future where that exists, that possibility is possible, and we can kind of, you've called that into you. Or you've
Right.
gone, or you've traveled there to it and brought something back from it that now I'm feeling and smiling as you just share the story. So, yeah, I really want to celebrate what you're talking about. It's not a fantasy. Fantasy can be fun. You know, we can imagine. I mean, sometimes people say they're not creative, and it's like, well, if you ever rehearsed a fight that you want to have with your boss because they were a jerk to you. Maybe you never have the fight, but you've imagined it in your head. And a lot of my clients are like, yeah. And I'm like, well, that's creativity. And beautiful. What a wonderful skill to fantasize and create and imagine possibilities. But that's not what I hear you talking about. I hear you talking about something that's your whole body mind can relate to and inhabit. And I wonder if you could, if you're willing to keep kind of stay with it. You said a couple times that it's psychoactive, that it's a felt sense that you could, like when you received it, you kind of, it was like a full yes. And that feels like important. It's hard to put words to those physical experiences, but we're definitely talking about that. That's some kind of life force that's flowing through you, that's vital and alive and enlivening you. How did it feel, or how does it feel? How might you describe what it feels like to be the elder, or to let the elder show up with us right now? What is that like for you?
Well, it is very felt. And by the way, this elder is, I don't know if you know the series Vikings. There's this guy that plays Ragnar Lothbrok, and he has this like very wild, bold look in his face. And later on in the seasons, you know, season 3 or 4, it's like he's met a Christian, and so he's kind of, you know, like almost like in a kind of trans paradigmatic kind of religious exploration. And you know, he's been in a lot of battles, and he's got this big beard and tattoos on his face, but his eyes are like just fucking shining. And so it's like he's elder, he's becoming older, but he's not like old and diminished. Like, so, you know, as I relate to that image, even right now in this moment, I can feel the sense of enlivenment that it brings me. And it's so it's a kind of it's a process of staying with that image. It's very meaningful and moving, and sometimes makes me weep. It's like it's just attuning to it, and it reveals more of itself. It's like the it's like it's not about kind of making it into something fixed necessarily. It's like it's attuning and feeling it wash through you, and as I say, the image will deepen and expand, and it's almost like a lifelong koan in a sense. So that's what comes to me. And as I, yeah, so as I notice that we're talking about it, it's like I feel more vivacious. And the other thing is this, I think it brings me into a sense of kind of wildness in my coaching, which might sound a little strange because it's not like I want to bring an agenda to my clients, but it does put me at my developmental edge more. You know, that enlivenment, that ensoulment is like a more risky place to be, but it's where I do my best coaching. It's like, it's a wilder place.
Oh. So one thing I want to underline is that, like, how do you know what you're for? Like, one way you know is when you are just in that place of weeping or laughing or some combination of the two. Like, that's a really potent yes. It's like, oh, like, yeah. So just thank you for sharing that. That image can bring you to a place of weeping. That to me is as good an answer as I've ever seen to like what is someone's essence or soul or purpose or whatever the word is. And a big part of the answer to that is like what brings you to that state of emotion and attention. And the wildness piece that doesn't sound like an agenda. I mean, it's almost like the opposite of an agenda. It's almost like being willing to risk, to truly risk, that you might say or do something with this person that will surprise them, that will get them to stand up straighter. Because wild energy is not always safe energy, but it is the energy from which we all evolved, right? Like we did not evolve in highly contained square houses with white walls or blue walls. We evolved in a context, and there's some great research around this. There's a book called The Extended Mind that I'm really getting excited about that a colleague just referred me to. That, like, essentially, our body mind, our nervous system, our brain, our body evolve in a context of incredible complexity, of this kind of fractal reality where at the macro and the micro, there are all these patterns that our nervous system has a relationship to. And you can, like, as an example, a concrete example, a tree, you can, like, zoom in on the leaf all the way to the edge of the leaf, or you can zoom out and see its whole canopy. And there's this kind of sort of some, it's not perfectly symmetrical, but it has a kind of repetition and symmetry that is so much more wild than the straight lines and the squares and the simple geometry of modern life. So for you to be in your wildness, it is edgy, I sense. It is, and it's invitational, because in a way, just by being your wild self, maybe some of whatever their wild self, that actually no amount of modernity can completely erase, that somewhere in all of us is this wildness that goes down deep. Really deep and really far back in linear time, like really far back.
And I do want to come to you in a moment, in terms of what archetypes have resonated with you. And it also feels like this is where we access our genius coaching, or you know, more of my genius coaching. And I think that there's a sense where, you know, as a coach, if we think about mastery, we do our training, and then we inherit the training and modality and the paradigm of our school train coaching school, which is good, you know, because we don't know about coaching. And if hopefully it's a good school, and then we, you know, we're gaining knowledge and experience. But then if that's where we stop, then, you know, we're only coach, we're kind of like all the other coaches from that training school, you know. So we're kind of like an inverted commas, an average coach. And I think that journey into mastery really does also involve like breaking through into that ensouled kind of sense of what am I here to bring? You know, what am I here to create? In a sense, I'm creating my own coaching paradigm, so to speak. That's a, you know, that's a fusion of the things that matter most to me. I mean, it's not a fusion. It's not like it's just a kind of, you know, kind of watered down mix of everything. It's no, it's something that's distilled out of my own unique self. So when it comes to belonging, like you said earlier, like, you know, like we can get caught in a kind of belonging which is around safety and you know, remaining kind of entrenched. But there's also this sense of belonging, you know, where we've now landed in us in our own kind of music that we're here to play. So what about you, Andy? Yeah, what about you with your journey around this and your archetypes?
Yeah, I love what you said there. Thank you for that. Someone pointed out to me at some point, and it just stuck, that the word belong is literally be long. You know, so to actually let ourselves extend into and outwards and downwards and upwards, that it's this expansive quality. And we need safety. Safety, I don't want to diminish safety, is important, but actually you can
Sure.
only get so much. You can only be so safe. And there's also like a willingness to be long with the truth that we don't know how much time we have, and we don't know when the moment is going to come that this body is going to be killed or degraded or decayed, but we know it's going to come. So how do we be long in the way that is not a retreat purely into safety? Also, sometimes to retreat is essential, sanctuary is essential, but also to like go out and adventure. And that's the archetype for me that feels the most potent, is the adventurer or the explorer. You know, every time I get to a horizon and I can see a vantage, and this is actually in the again, the book The Extended Mind is very present with me, because I just landed in my hands like this past week through a colleague. But one of the things the author points out is that based on her research around neurobiology and the human species and our history, we essentially need to, all of us need some amount of two things. And this is exactly what we're talking about. We need some amount of refuge, safety. We feel really good when we have a refuge, a home, a safe harbor, a sanctuary. And we need some amount of vantage, the ability to see into the distance. The thing that's missing from that articulation for me is that also there are some of us, at least, who feel really called to leave refuge because of whatever promise exists out in that horizon. And that's, I feel that in me, like every time I come to a, can see a horizon from the top of a hill. It doesn't have to be some big, intense mountain. There's some like unfolding in me. There's some like something kind of comes up from my like, call it my root chakra or my belly, and kind of opens up into my heart. And I'm just like, I want to go there. And that is a deeply, that's a deeply human archetype. Everything we have now for good and for ill includes, is a result and an extension of, and probably there we could get into a really interesting debate about this, but I really believe this. It's a result and an extension of our nomadic ancestors. And not all of our ancestors were super nomadic. Some were very nomadic, others were very settled, some were in between. But the explorers were the ones who, wherever the refuge was, they were looking for the vantage, the horizon, and moving towards it. And I can really feel a sense that that's in my genetic, that's part of my genetic inheritance. And again, that we could again debate, is that my imagination at work? Maybe, but when I really call that in or let that come into me, I feel my version of that kind of aliveness, that like, oh, I could almost just weep. I feel so relaxed and open, and like I want to laugh with it and cry with it at the same time. It feels so good. And to bring that energy into a coaching conversation, like, oh, like I, this is amazing. By listening to what you're saying, that explorer in me can start to notice where are the vantages and the refuge inside this person. Where do they feel safe, and also where do they feel open? And how can I accompany them on that adventure of knowing their interiority with more richness and more fidelity, like with more clarity? And every single one of us is like a universe unto ourselves. So every coaching conversation for me becomes this micro adventure where the explorer in me, who can just set out with a small pack on and a good pair of boots, and you know, the most essential items for survival, and go, okay, let's go find out what's over there. That's a really enlivening and energizing archetype for me.
Yeah, so it's like I'm hearing that it's a kind of attunement to a particular experience within a coaching conversation. And I'm curious, what if you could say a little bit more about what that explorer feels like, and the kinds of what is it attuning to? You know, I mean, you are speaking to that already, but we could flesh that out. It's kind of attuning to something, isn't it?
Yeah, that's, let me just sit with that for a moment or walk with it. I mean, even the edit I just made to my language, let me sit with that for a moment. No, let me walk with it. That's part of the attunement, is like, where is there the possibility for motion? So if I'm working with someone who feels really overwhelmed or stuck or closed in, you know, or like there's something weighing on them, or there's something at their back. Notice how these are all metaphors, actually, already our imagination. Like, if we can help our clients tune into what it feels like to be in the situation as they understand it, then often we'll get answers that have this very embodied quality, even if they haven't yet felt the full embodiment of it. So they feel pursued or hunted or overwhelmed or pressured or stuck or closed in, or all of these, you know, can really feel the physicality of that. And so my explorer is kind of like in me is just getting close to that in a really gentle way, like in this, because this is new territory, right? And so if I'm just like marching on it, oh, okay, like, hey, you feel really hunkered down. Why don't you try taking some deep breaths and, relaxing your nervous system? I don't understand yet. So I'm entering this new terrain. I have to go really gently and just listen and listen some more and notice how it feels in me to be this close to them as they describe their overwhelm. And then as we tune in, it's just like through the process of the coaching conversation, there's a chance to help them come towards me and towards a place where they can start to be an explorer of their own reality and start tuning to why a part of them feels stuck and where might the horizon be? Where might they get some vantage on their stuckness? And what might they see once they're up there? So it has a quality of traversing a landscape or a terrain. And I'm tuning for that. How can I move into the reality as much as I'm able and help them move through and beyond the precise moment that they're in so that they can see the bigger reality that's like in every direction there's possibility from anywhere. So how can I help them start to attune to that ability for movement? And it feels like in my body, it feels like a kind of, if you've ever come upon the edge of a river or come to the top of a hill, it feels like a kind of quality of arrival. Oh, I'm really here. Wow, look at where I am. Okay, this is nice. Now what can I see? Where does the river flow? Or how far can I see over the horizon? It has this quality of arrival, but also this quality of potential. That okay, now we can keep going because there's a clear path now that we can see that before it was just all wilderness and trees and the emotional and intellectual equivalent of wilderness and trees, like it just feels tight and then something opens and then it's like go slow, pay attention, put a finger to the wind, notice if there's smoke on the horizon, notice where the threats might be, and then help the client say, okay, where to next? That's the way the explorer archetype just feels so fun and joyful and useful, that it is really useful.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking also that it's evocative of a sense of like being on the path, like being on the trail, so to speak. Like there's a feeling of like knowing when one is on the trail, even if that means acknowledging that there's kind of fear here and a sense of stuckness. Well, that's like that's where I am in the exploration. So, that's what I'm appreciating about this archetype. And interestingly, from attachment theory perspective, it's like that dynamic of being able to come back to a trusted other where one can find a sense of safety and regulation, but then that allows for one to then go out and explore, so that's like
Yes.
the common for so then you and that's and then in the exploration, that's where one finds the meaning, in attachment theory. That's one of the basic ideas. So I find that very kind of analogous to coaching, it's like.
And it's really hard to find that. Like, what is a coach for? Or what is a practitioner for? Or what is a therapist for? Like, the flavor that we're talking about has this deep well of imagination and kind of archetypal history. It's really hard to find that attachment in like most modern settings. Like, what is a corporation for? Well, the answer legally is to essentially make as much profit as possible. So if you're part of a corporation, you might get good benefits and paid vacation and all that stuff, but ultimately that corporation will not be loyal to you as a human-made entity, as a human-made system. It won't be loyal to you if its ultimate aims are not being served of profit. And so many people make the mistake, and I've made this mistake, and it feels awful to over-attach to this human-made system that's not actually able to meet that need for us. And so then they get laid off, or they get start to feel the emptiness, the repetition of their role, and then like so then the like wouldn't it be great if we didn't live in a context where Okay, here comes like a paid practitioner. Okay, we could talk about the commodification of coaching and all the pressures on the coach to produce outcomes because the coach is being paid by the all of that. But ideally, the coach drops in with that person and helps them create that kind of container that you described that's highly imaginative and highly rich and draws in their aliveness and their essence and their vital life force, and they can start to form ultimately a strong self-attachment. I think you and I, as we talk about these archetypes, like these are put in the attachment theory language. We're just forming really strong attachments to ourselves so that we feel really safe and trusting of our own inner wildness to go be with another wild creature, actually, because every one of us is a wild creature, and we can like bring that self-attachment in, and they can start to connect with us and open up and start to ultimately, over time, feel that self-trust that they can navigate the wilds. I think that's a really important service that a transformational coach, at least, can provide in these moments.
Beautiful. I want to, if I'm thinking of the listener, I want to see if we could articulate like how we could play around with archetypes in our work as coaches. Like how did you discover that archetype of the explorer? Was it, yeah.
A big part of it, I'll tell another story if that's all right. Actually, the flavor of it and the precision of it came through an experience I had as a father. So maybe I'll, before I tell the story, I'll say that, like, you can go take like a Enneagram assessment and get a typology, or you can go there are archetypal assessments out there, or you can play with tarot cards, or like there are many, 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 or you can read Carl Jung's work, or just go into Jungian, into the world of Jungian psychoanalysts, and it's just like rich. So there's a rich lineage of thought and practice and assessment around the potency of archetypes. But I want to be really clear, like what I kind of mean when I say archetype is something that I might describe as things that people will do naturally in a context that is supportive enough and autonomous enough that they can just follow their own curiosity. They can follow their nose. They can follow the pull. And that's actually a quite a rare context because of all the things we've talked about. But when someone is just kind of in a safe enough context in a place where they can know who they are, but also be with others, they're going to find their way into a role, a place of service in that community. And it might be they might be tending the earth and cultivating food. They might be creating a container, a space for listening in their cabin in the woods. They might be going, come on, let's go for a hike. Let's go see what's up on that mountain. They might be tinkering and working with tools, whether they're stone or metal. Or now these days with digital tools, like, so we have all of these things that people just do. They don't need any bosses to come and tell them to do it. Like actually, if just left to our own devices, we get up to so much interesting flavors of humanity. And I think if we start to like see those as directional signs, we could follow each one of those roles down into a core archetype. And so for mine, it's that explorer. For you right now, it's that kind of like elder who's creating a safe container in his house in the woods. And so what's important is that there's no right archetype for a coach or for a person, but rather to see that they have some natural essence, some natural gifts and skills that, if left to their own devices, without pressure or expectation from modern society, they would find their way to. I really believe that as just kind of, that's just what we do. So can we help you find that? I think that's another way to put all of this in less fanciful terms. But sometimes those less fanciful terms are not adequate enough. They're too stale, they're too abstract, they're too general. So then the work is kind of what you and I have been talking about, which is to bring it to life more in a specific way. And for me, that came to life as a dad, like this archetype. In a way, it's kind of an adjacent archetype, but I think this connects. I have my son now is 5, my middle son. He'll be 5 next month. When he was a baby, he had a really hard time sleeping. And anyone who's ever not gotten sleep knows that that like really sucks. Whether it's with a child or you're taking care of someone or you have insomnia or whatever it is, not sleeping really takes a toll on our physiology. It's like torture. It's actually used as torture. It's really awful. But we're just trying to, my wife was taking a turn to soothe him. And okay, it's my turn. So I'm staying there inside our house and I'm looking up because I can see the ceiling. It's maybe 2 or 3 feet away from me. And it's like I'm in this dark room, there's a little nightlight on, and I'm not slept, and my baby's squalling, and my wife is trying to sleep, and she's not sleeping, of course, because this poor little dude is yowling in the middle of the night at 3 in the morning. And I think just by virtue of the fact that I wasn't really in my quote unquote right mind, I was in a bit of an altered state. I had kind of a waking dream, and I suddenly like looked up at the ceiling and it wasn't there anymore, and I could see the stars. And the stars were, the stars that our ancestors would have seen before the sky was filled with ambient light of cities that actually hides a lot of the starlight now. And it was just like, here I was standing on a hilltop in the night sky and camped with my family, standing watch. Taking a turn to keep the family safe. And so this archetype of like the guardian, this really came to life to me that actually at some point in my ancestral, like not in a, I don't know all the details, but I know this is true, that not in a generic way, but in a very specific way, one of my ancestors once stood on a hilltop keeping his family safe. And that archetype of like, the explorer who's also has to sometimes set up camp and stand guard. It was like meeting, I met that in the middle of the night and it sort of came towards me and I felt, and suddenly it wasn't like, why won't you sleep? Oh my God, this just felt like, oh yeah, what's coming up for you as I share that?
Well, so I'm noticing that, the guardian has a certain capacity or quality to it. So again, it's like something comes online as you tap into that. In fact, in the moment, very moment when you're feeling maybe like pretty wrecked and lacking capacity, it broke through. And so that's the other thing I want to name, which is that, for me, these archetypes are. They often come through when not in a kind of rational state, So for me, it's
Yeah.
been like when I've been fasting or immersed in nature and kind of chanting and entering altered states basically.
Yes.
And you, that was, I mean, I've been there with lack of sleep from kids. I mean, that is an altered state,
It's an altered state. Yeah. It's
and
such a
it's often not very pleasant, but yeah, it's an altered state. And that, so it strikes me as being that's, for coaches, people listening, that if you feel inspired by that, this is one of the ways in. There are many resources out there, but it's like, yeah, it's not something you kind of just sit down. I mean, some kind of deductive, you can kind of use your mind a little bit to go like, what are the common threads in my life that I've noticed? But I think it's like that's a kind of setting up this all, if you can then move into a space where it's kind of there's a word I'm looking for, like well, it's received, it's not, it's not like you're
yeah, I
thinking
didn't
about it.
go like, oh, this sucks. Let me think of something that will help make this. It was just literally, I was in that altered state, had this kind of waking dream, felt this ancestral presence come towards me that said, you're doing what your ancestors did for many, many generations. This is important and noble work. You're just where you need to be right now. And I wish I could say, and then my son fell asleep, and we all, and it was like, no, he was still screaming for the rest of the night. But suddenly all this resource was there that like I was literally resourced. I was sourcing into something much bigger than the the modern story, which is the story of like a beleaguered father who's underslept and under pressure and feeling frustrated and tired. Like that was also true. I was that person. I am that person sometimes still. And it was also true that I am part of, and you are part, and we are part of an incredibly rich human story that includes many, many, many examples of people accessing what you're calling an altered state through many different ways. But the cool thing I think is, as you name that and underline that, I'm really, really glad that you are, is that even that word altered state has become to be equated with some kind of like transaction. Let me get this plant medicine or this drug or this thing and alter my state so that XYZ can happen. But actually, no, it's sort of, it's relational. It's pre-transaction. There's a way in which we as coaches, even if it's really subtle, if we're showing up attuned as the explorer or as the guardian or as the caretaker or as the elder or as a vessel for Guanyin's compassionate energy, if we're showing up with that, allowing that to come into us, then something will come into our client's reality too. And their state might ever so subtly, it doesn't have to be dramatic and psychedelic, but ever so subtly, their state starts to alter because we're in this relationship. And then in that altered state, new possibilities can come in. They don't need to be manufactured, they can just come in because the vessel has changed in some way. The vessel is ready to receive them. And by the vessel, I literally mean our bodies are like they're in a changed state, so something else can come in.
And in a sense, with that you just said, we want to avoid be aware if things become transactional. Are you pointing to, what I would call more of a poetic attunement or an unfolding attunement where, in a sense, we're dropping our agenda of getting somewhere in inverted commas, and more, entering into a kind of space of letting things be, of attuning to what's here, allowing this, archetype or kind of frequency of the explorer to permeate the experience, and then it's like you don't know what's gonna come out of it. Like that's the point, is but it allows for something to emerge that wasn't there before. Is that kind of, did I pick that up right, or?
Yeah, that feels it. And as you say that, it sort of strikes me that even like there's just a there is an a, there's a lightness here to hold all of this lightly, including attuning like to the archetype of the explorer. It's I know when I'm tuned in, when I feel like I'm on an adventure. If I don't feel like I'm on an adventure and I start to think I need to feel like I'm on an adventure for this coaching session to be good, then I've subtly fallen back into the transactional trap of that there's supposed to be a certain thing happening, and if it's not, there's a problem. But that poetic attunement, which is still kind of an abstraction, it's still a big, wide umbrella word, we might start to notice it's more specific in the moment flavor if we allow for these archetypes to come to us because they are our inheritance. Again, we're talking about what is a human for, really? And a human is for exploration. A human is for caretaking. A human is for cultivation. A human is for creativity. A human is for tinkering and experimenting. A human is for building. A human can be for destroying. We're a potent force if we think about ourselves as a species. So, how do we just make the space to allow for whatever energy, what did you call it, frequency, like, if there's a frequency coming in, any frequency, then there's possibility. And that feels like the kind of stance that's the most generative as a coach.
As we come towards the end of our conversation, I just want to bring in a couple more things, like about the role of joy here. Because if I think about my own life and being a container, if I think back, and I've told this story a lot on the podcast now, so forgive me if you've heard this before, but it's like when I had my Star Wars figures, the way I would play with them would be I would kind of create this scene, this I would a container. Like I wouldn't be like bah, bah, like bashing them together. I'd be like, I'd create this kind of scene, and then I'd kind of be done. Or when I went to art school, I loved the feeling of being with a painting or a piece of art I was making, and as attuning, and then something would emerge. So the container had a kind of an intelligence of attuning to what wanted to emerge. When I was DJing in nightclubs, to pretty good crowds, it's like that's what I was attuning to the crowd and the felt sense of emergence and evolution and energy and eros. And it's what I do with my coaching clients, and I enjoy it. It's like what you said. It's like I just na I don't it's not like I sat down and really kind of, as a child, like thought about that. I just started doing it,
You started doing it.
and I enjoyed it basically. It was enjoyable. So,
Yeah, I think the knock-on effect of this kind of work is it is often incredibly joyful. And I've worked with many clients who are in states of intense, what we might describe as intense and unpleasant emotional states or thought pattern states. And I've been in those. I'm like, I just got back from a big trip and I had jet lag and I was like, my patience was like paper thin. And it's like all of it. So there's no judgment on any of these states. If we can kind of extract the moral value from being a person, sometimes what is a person for? A person is for being sad or upset. And in those intense, unpleasant states, if we can start to bring our essence and invite our clients to notice and track for, in my case, again, like an explorer, like their essence to start to find the little threads, just like you have found yours in all of these different ways. And by the way, I love the Star Wars story. I feel pretty lucky that I get to like be a guest on the show and hear you tell it to me directly. So thank you for that. But like, if we just help them find those threads, even in the midst of really difficult challenge or uncertainty or loss, this surprising well of joy and laughter can arrive. And maybe it only lasts a moment or lasts for a few minutes in the coaching conversation, but just the fact that it can arrive even in the midst of really real difficulty, that's another sign that you're on the right path, you're following the right thread. So yeah, it should. You can have fun. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's, I can't remember who said it. Andrew something, and he's a mystical kind of teacher, poet. But joy is a moral imperative in our times. And
Yeah, that
that
makes
kind
me
of makes
think.
it pretty serious, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's
Well,
like,
it is serious, yeah, but somehow that's the paradox. Like that makes me think of Joanna Macy's quote, which is something like, I don't know if we're gonna make it. I don't know if we're gonna make it. We might not make it. But even if we're not gonna make it, I'd rather go down looking each other in the eye.
Yeah, I was in a small group with her once when she said that to us, and there was about six or seven or eight of us on the call. And man, she's like, I don't know, she must be, she's all, like old, I don't know, in her 90s, I think. But her, I mean, talk about that image I shared earlier. Her eyes were blazing, and
Amazing.
she said something similar. She was like, if we're going down, I'm gonna go down, partying and loving. She didn't mean partying in a hedonistic sense, but like celebrating. And it was a massive transmission for me of, a way we can be with what's unfolding. So, yeah, Andy, this has been a great conversation. And where can we find out more about what you're doing? You've got a cool podcast, and yeah, just you're a kind of multidisciplinary kind of creative being.
Yeah. Well, definitely I want people to check out the Wonder Dome, which you have been a guest on twice now, once just one-on-one, and also another time with Ishita, the beautiful Ishita Sharma. So we should share the links to that for folks. But the podcast is called Wonder Dome. It's on Substack. My dear colleague, Gabriel Wilson, who you've also interviewed, I don't know if he's been on the podcast, but you've had him in one or more of your summits. We In January, we are putting together two programs under this umbrella of something called we're calling the Wisdom Gym. And one is for people in leadership roles, and one is for coaches and practitioners, facilitators who might want to play with some of the stuff you and I talked about today, and also some other from some other lineages like Zen wisdom. And it's called the Wisdom Gym. And the best place to learn more about that right now is actually just to connect with me on LinkedIn or connect with Gabe on LinkedIn. So those are probably the two best places for folks who might be listening to this to go learn some more.
Thanks, Andy.
Yeah. Thank you, Joel. I feel I had a lot of fun. If we're tracking for joy, I feel really honored by your generous attention, by the work that you've been doing to make a bid for the importance of transformational coaching. Like we could have just said, what's a coach for? I don't know, ask Joel. You know, like his answer is we need, this participation in transformation. We gotta be here for it. So I've learned so much from you directly, learned so much from all of the experiences that you've curated. It's a delight. It's really been a delight to have this time with you. And I hope we get some more in whatever shape or form it takes down the road.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. Well, I'm touched by that, and to be continued, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Joel. Big love.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is for me the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this. And it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com. Put your name in the sign-up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.